We're slightly late returning. We're a long way away in the far end of the universe, and we're sharing one loo, so apologies. We mistimed how long it would take us. Okay, just before we start back off, Ms. Coombs is going to take us through the next item. I noticed that Cawston Parish Council have their Toblerone up.
Thank you very much. It's Chris Monk from Cawston Parish Council. Just a very brief supplementary point that's occurred to us during the break is when we're considering with Norfolk County Council of Broadland and the applicants about the issues that we've been talking about previously, is the location of Mobility Area 6 set in stone? Might there not be an advantage to putting it close to the B1149?
I'll ask the applicant to comment on that, please.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. We'd have to take that point away to look at whether that could be relocated or not and the reasons for it being in that particular location in the first place. But we could bring that explanation to the meeting if that would be helpful.
Certainly, that would be very helpful. Thank you. And then let us turn now to item 2, Roman numeral 6. I think it's just dripped off the edge of the page there. To Roman numeral 6, please.
So this is really looking at the other aspects in Cawston, and I think perhaps quite a lot of the points that I might have raised will be covered at the meeting that you're going to have. So I've just got a couple of points. The first thing, if the applicant could just clarify the position with regard to structural surveys of the properties, because we had a representation from a householder in Cawston who said that she'd heard from Broadland that all houses were going to need to be surveyed, and she was asking who would pay for those. And then I think we've read also from the applicant that actually you're going to be utilising the surveys that were done for Hornsey. So I think we just wanted a bit of clarity on the this is structural surveys of the houses in Cawston.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So with regards to the structural surveys, the applicant's position is that the assessments that have been conducted do not indicate that there's any significant vibration impacts, and therefore the increase in vibration levels are far less than which would generate cosmetic or structural damage to the properties. So at this time, they're not proposing to undertake any structural surveys. And we're not aware of what Orsted's Hornsey Project 3's position is on structural surveys at this time.
So can I just ask Broadland, this householder in Cawston has gained the impression that structural surveys need to be undertaken, and she was obviously concerned about whether she would need to pay for them or not.
Yeah, Matthew Rook, Broadland District Council. I haven't personally given any assurances about structural surveys being necessary, so I'm not sure where that's come from myself at this stage. That's all I can say at this stage.
Just give me a minute.
And perhaps while Ms. Coombs is looking at that, can we hear from Cawston as well on this point?
Thank you. Chris Monk, Cawston District Council, Parish Council, sorry, promoting myself. With the situation that we've already discussed about noise and vibration.
Could you just bring your microphone closer?
The situation that we've already discussed this morning about noise and vibration, clearly the figures are all going to change, and the whole assessment is going to need to be redefined. I would point out that even in the Hornsey 3 rather limited review that came out last March, paragraph 3.25 says, with the exception of 27 High Street, current VDV levels are all within permitted levels, suggesting that the current level of vibration will be less than adverse comment possible for both daytime and nighttime. It doesn't actually say then what happens about 27 High Street, which is an exception, which clearly has vibration levels that are above permitted levels, but it's conveniently overlooked by the Hornsey 3 report. And so with the new traffic system that's being suggested, the whole noise and vibration issue becomes a much more serious matter for us, and we stand by the idea that structural surveys would be required for those properties that are affected. Thank you.
Has the applicant got any further comments?
Claire Davis, on behalf of the applicant. In terms of the proposals, so the changes to the intervention scheme, we're not anticipating that would actually have any effect on any of the existing noise and vibration assessments. As alluded to earlier, the scheme is being tweaked slightly. We will obviously take into consideration, once that scheme has been agreed, what we will, as following the road safety audit, we'll assess it to ensure that there isn't any change, but we're not anticipating a change at this stage based on the proposed amendments at this point.
I think it would be helpful when you have the meeting and in the position statement after that, that any aspects such as noise and vibration, heritage, impact on conservation area, all those points can be covered, because those are all points that we raised in the agenda as being outstanding matters between yourself and the district council, because I think it's important that we've got the full picture when that position statement comes back.
Claire Davis, on behalf of the applicant, yeah, we can ensure that we can cover those additional points in the position statement as well.
Beg your pardon, Corston Parish Council.
Thank you. Chris Monk, Corston Parish Council. Very quick point. I'd just remind everyone here that, if I may, that the applicants are the only people that considered Corston to be a medium sensitivity and created their formulas on that basis. Everyone else considers Corston to be a high sensitivity area. I think that has an impact on these matters. Thank you.
When you say everybody else, can you define who everybody else is, please?
Well, I think all of us on this side of the room, the County Council, District Council and Parish Council, individual residents, and anybody else that's spoken to us.
Could I pick this up with Norfolk County Council? We note from your statement of common ground, in your responses to written questions, you have also made this point about not agreeing that this is a medium sensitivity route, and in fact, if you think that the effects are greater than have been assessed. Could you elaborate on that point and also tell us what conversations you've had with the applicant with that regard?
Well, it was just a very basic point, just to say that's the very reason for asking for the highway intervention scheme. I think what the applicant is saying is that the route through Corston is classed as an HGV route, and it's also got a certain status within our route hierarchy. Mm. But the problem you've got with that is that the reason for that is that's because that's pretty much the only available route. So traffic has got to go somewhere. It doesn't mean to say that because it's got a certain status within the hierarchy that it's suitable to keep on adding more and more traffic. All it means is that's the most suitable route out of all of the routes that are currently available.
Has there been any discussion on that matter from the applicant, Mr. Ross?
Andrew Ross on behalf of the applicant. If I could just clarify the point on the medium sensitivity first. The Link 34 through Corston was indeed classified as medium sensitivity. This is an exercise we undertake applying the relevant guidance to undertake an initial screening of what, in this case, with a 60-kilometre onshore cable route, is a very large study area. So it's an initial exercise to screen in where there is potential for significant impacts. So having identified what the traffic demand would be along this link, We then assessed that there would be a medium magnitude of impact on that link. So applying our environmental impact matrices, a medium impact on a medium sensitive receptor was indeed a significant impact, and that's why we're promoting a highway intervention, open brackets, mitigation scheme. So in essence, whether it's medium or high makes no difference to the assessment. It's a significant impact and therefore needs to be adequately mitigated. And I won't go back to the discussions earlier today, but that's why we're working with stakeholders to come up with a solution for that highway mitigation scheme.
Irrespective of the outcome of that, whether it's a medium sensitivity route or higher, the outcome is the same, which is what you're saying, is that there is a highway intervention scheme. But would the findings of the ES, of the environmental statement, be different if the sensitivity of the route were considered higher, as suggested by other stakeholders?
No, they wouldn't, because this is essentially a flag whereby it alerts the assessor to go in and do a more detailed assessment based on the highway environment, the current situation in terms of baseline traffic flows, and the flows you're adding to that baseline situation. And taking all that into account, you consider what the magnitude of effect was. So as I said earlier, it's effectively using broad sensitivity classifications to alert the assessor that they need to do more detailed work. So it matters not if that had been high or medium. The highway intervention scheme still needs to deal with the finite traffic impact.
Any further questions from the County Council? Causton Parish Council?
If I may, very quickly. I mean, Mr. Ross talked about the implications for the traffic intervention scheme. Does that argument also apply to areas like noise and vibration? Are those classifications more sensitive about whether it's classed as medium or high? And if that is the case, why bother with having medium or high? Because if the answer is the same in all cases, it seems a bit back to front. Thank you.
Just to summarise, if the applicant could respond to the point that, given that it's a medium sensitivity route, do the outcomes apply to noise and vibration? Mitigation for noise and vibration.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So the noise and vibration and the air quality assessments both use the traffic data that is generated. They have their own approach in terms of identifying sensitive receptors, etc. So the noise and vibration and air quality results are based on the traffic data, not on the classifications used within the traffic chapter, and they generate their own, obviously based on their own set of criteria in terms of their sensitivity analysis.
So I think what's going to be helpful in this position statement is if, what we're hearing is different technical areas are assessed in slightly different ways, and we understand that. But in terms of the sort of impact on the community, so the amenity impacts of all these things, if there could be some summarising, wrapping up statement that thinks about the communities that are affected, not just sort of separate individual technical areas, I think that would be a helpful document. And I just wonder, Professor Barnett, Would you like to comment at this stage just on that point that I've made?
Thank you very much, ma'am. I very much appreciate that opportunity because that's precisely what I would like to do. We've heard discussion of issues of sensitivity, and most of it has applied, as far as I can discern, to questions of environmental sensitivity. The evidence that I have submitted to you concerns the sensitivity of human beings rather than receptors, and those receptors are extremely sensitive along a whole number of dimensions to do with human health and welfare, and the detail of what I'm concerned about is contained within my report, which, as I've commented to you, runs to 8,500 words. And the more general point is that among this welter of detail about parking spaces and highway geometry and things like that, there is absolutely no balancing concern with the welfare of the human population of this area in relation to this proposed scheme. And there is no doubt at all, taking standard measures of impacts of projects on human welfare and health, that there will be substantial impacts. I am entirely shocked, I was going to say surprised, I'm shocked that you have not used the method recommended in the UK government's Green Book of project evaluation and appraisal, which does indeed take proper cognizance of impacts on human health and welfare. That is the concern of Corpus Dean and Saxthorpe Parish Council. It's my concern from a professional perspective, and it's my personal concern. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
I just asked the applicant to respond to Professor Barnett's point, and I think the rep, it was Rep 2068 that representation came in to us. And did the applicant respond? And if so, can you advise us where, please?
Claire Davis, on behalf of the applicant, I will have to confirm where we did refer to that when I have the documents, but I can confirm that possibly after lunch, where the response is, if that's helpful.
Yeah, certainly. If I forget to ask you, then please remind me that you're going to do that. In the heat of the moment, I can overlook things.
I just wonder if there's anything that Broadland wants to contribute at this stage with regards to the heritage aspects in Causton, or whether those can be fed into the process at the meeting.
Yes, Matthew Rook, Broadland District Council. That was my thoughts, that we'd raise that. I noted that you're looking at the position statements to include heritage and the conservation area impacts. So they were my notes, and that's what I was looking to, in addition to the other elements, bring those to the meeting with my environmental health officer and heritage officer as well.
Thank you. And Causton, are you content with that discussion taking place at the meeting rather than input here? Because we have read all the submissions that you've sent us already.
Thank you. Chris Monk, Causton Parish Council. Yes, we'd be very happy to do that. We're very conscious that we need to move this meeting along.
Yeah. So in terms of the item 2A7, then that the points made there on the heritage matters will be discussed, and if we can be clear that it's the differences of opinion between Broadland and the applicant that we'd particularly want to see either resolution of or an understanding of where there were still differences. Thank you.
And just before we leave Causton, the meeting that you'll be having in February is going to be really, really important. I think it would help the panel if you would be able to, between you, agree an agenda for that meeting and submit it to us for deadline 4. So not the detail, but just the agenda of the topics. And I'm saying this because you are all here today. So my ambition would be that you could sit together or talk together and just agree what those points will be in the agenda, and that will all give you a good framework to go forward. Thank you. Okay, so let's move on now to Alton and Alton Street.
So taking it very much the way it's been set out in the agenda, can we
Can we hear from the applicant the methodology that you use to determine the baseline data for vehicle movement? This has been raised in a few submissions in the examination. And we're particularly interested to hear events such as increased traffic over harvest periods from agricultural vehicles and how these have been taken into account.
Thank you, Ma'am. Andrew Ross on behalf of the applicant. The issue of baseline data for the street was considered in detail by Hornsey Project 3 in their Deadline 4 submission to their examination entitled Main Construction Compound Access Strategy VISIM Model Report. Hornsey Project 3 utilised a micro simulation model to simulate background traffic and therefore inform the design for a highway intervention scheme for the street. The report set out how the model was calibrated and subsequent updates to that report. To inform the model, surveys were carried out in October 2018 to understand what the background traffic was. In addition to that, the agribusinesses affected by the street were contacted to see what their peak harvest demand might be. E.F. Harold Potato Farm responded and set out what their peak daily traffic demand would be, and that was added to the baseline traffic. Excuse me. A number of other agribusinesses did not respond, so as a proxy, Hornsey Project 3 quadrupled the demand from the EF Harold Potato Farm. So EF Harold indicated 22 tractor movements a day and 10 HGV movements a day. If you like, as a safe estimate and a proxy, those figures were quadrupled and added to the baseline traffic. The modelling report was reviewed by Norfolk Vanguard and found to be satisfactory, and the model tolerance was not compromised by those estimates for the agribusiness. So in other words, they felt like safe estimates, but if they went a bit higher, it would not significantly impact on the outputs of the model. The model was effectively measuring journey times to understand where passing bays would be required on the street. So there's quite a broad range of mitigation in which traffic flows could fluctuate. So Norfolk Vanguard reviewed that, satisfied themselves that the assessment and the data was sound, and this was submitted into the Norfolk Vanguard examination, this position. The applicant has adopted the same position.
Thank you. As an expert, in your opinion, is the industry best practice, is that the method that you've just described that Hornsey 3 adopted, is that industry best practice for determining baseline data?
So the baseline counts that were done were certainly industry best practice. An industry, typically for transport assessment, follows neutral periods, doesn't really account for spikes. Most road mitigation in this country is designed to neutral periods. In my professional opinion, the Hornsea Project 3 did everything they could to establish what the spike in demand might be, and their proxies that they applied felt very safe, the numbers for a link of that type.
Thank you. Can I bring Alton Parish Council, and then I'll turn to you, Mr. Bunn. Thank you.
Paul Killingback, Chair, Alton Parish Council. A couple of points that we would make here. We were instrumental in trying to advise Hornsey on their methodology for estimating traffic. The detail that you mentioned earlier, that I think they spent one or possibly 2 days looking at monitoring and measuring traffic, and then they extrapolated that data somehow. We had a lot of issues with them. We met them on numerous working party meetings. We made the point about the aggregate businesses that they hadn't really picked up. There are at least three, as has been said. There's EF Harold, there is Saltcar Farms, there is also what we still call Bernard Matthews, which is not Bernard Matthews anymore, but it's a turkey operator. There are other businesses around. One landowner has told us, you know, they produce 30,000 tons of harvest traffic a year. The potato store that is just being built, not yet completed, which will hold 22,000 tons of potatoes on the street, that generates, I would imagine, a lot more than the there's tractors going in, but there's also HGVs coming in and out. We, I think, had to provide some data for that. I accept that it's been said that the base data was then quadrupled. But we wonder if we doubt very much that the figures actually represent the true meaning of what happens. Harvest traffic, by its nature, is a movable feast. We have the situation where the crops around Alton are harvested throughout the year. It isn't just a period, June, July, whatever. There are only 2 months in the year that are not subject to harvest because of the various crops that are grown. We really do, and because they move around, the street at the time of any particular measurement may be representative of a busy year or a less busy year. It's very difficult. I severely doubt that this is taken into account sufficiently.
Alison Shaw, I can't reach. It's not moving. Okay. Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. If I could just prevail upon the room for a moment to add to what Mr. Killingback has just said. The applicant has just described the way in which Hornsea Project 3 established the baseline vehicle movements for Alton Link 68. We maintained, as Mr. Killingback has just described, we had a strong relationship of working with Hornsea 3. And some of the details that have just been described are actually inaccurate about the way in which those details, those baseline measurements were found. And we are very concerned because of the flawed nature of the way in which those vehicle movements were established, that they have been adopted hook, line, and sinker by First Norfolk Vanguard and then Norfolk Boreas, because they were flawed in the ways that Mr. Killingback has just outlined. For instance, in the use of the VISM, in the establishing of the modelling, the traffic modelling that they did, that Hornsey 3 produced, the model itself is very inaccurate. They took the potato farm to be that, when in fact it is an agribusiness with 7 or 8 crops. And the vehicle movements that were there, that were then quadrupled, were given to them by us, not by E.F. Harold. Those traffic figures were given to them by Alton Parish Council from a planning application for one potato store, for the vehicle movements that were going to be generated by the potato store that Mr. Killingback has just referred to, which has only just been completed. That was the vehicle movements for one potato store, 22,000 tons of potatoes, 2,200 tons of potatoes, of which is 10% of the overall crop, which is 22,000 tons of potatoes. Now, E.F. Harold also grows on a massive scale, we're talking thousands of acres here, also grows beans, wheat, barley, maize, sugar beet, all these carrots, all these crops are sequential and many are overlapping. And that is one of the agribusinesses. There is another on a similar scale, Salt Car Farms, which is the airfield, which is Alton Airfield, which is owned, the owner runs Alton Airfield, and that's why where the Hornsey 3 main construction compound is going to be. So you can double, if you like, the kinds of traffic, though it's not quite the same because they don't bring all of it to Alton Airfield, but all the F. Harold's vehicle movements will tend to come to Street Farm, So the quadrupling doesn't impress us one jot. We cannot estimate those numbers. Now, when the applicant has just said that approaches were made by Hornsey 3 to the local landowners and E.F. Harold replied, that is actually inaccurate. The applicant may not know this, the applicant Boreas may not know this, but Orsted Hornsey 3 received no information back from the landowners. The vehicle movements for the potato farm were derived, as I've said, from Alton Parish Council from a planning application. So it did not come from the... So the landowners did not reply. Neither of them did. By the way, this augurs ill for part of the scheme which the applicant has described of how they will manage the interaction between the construction traffic for this and all and the other projects, alongside the harvest traffic, which, as Mr. Killingback has described, is 9 or 10 months of every year. That mechanism has been described by all applicants as liaison. We will liaise with the local agricultural businesses. Well, this liaison is not going too well so far, because they have not responded to simple requests for traffic, for their own traffic vehicle movements. They're very efficient farmers. They know their vehicle movements. Thank you.
Before I go back to the applicant, I think there's two points here. One is that potentially the way the baseline data has been collected, or the baseline data that has been taken into account in the ES, is potentially not the worst case scenario if what Alton Parish Council are saying is taken into account. I'll gather views from other stakeholders around the room, but if in the meantime the applicant could have a think about whether they have satisfied themselves that the information they've received from Hornsey 3, given everything that Alton Parish Council have said, does in fact represent the worst case scenario as assessed in the ES. Can I start with Professor Barnett?
Thank you very much indeed. Terms such as micro-simulation traffic impact models are easily bruited about. Most of these models, I deal with models quite a lot professionally, obey one rule, which is the American acronym, garbage in, garbage out, which is the acronym GIGO, which is very well known in the modelling business. I deal a great deal with infectious disease modelling. One of the aspects of traffic simulation in respect of the B1145 revolves around ambulance times and the responses with which the ambulance station is able to respond. If you look at the map of the project's potential impact area, the B1145 is the main channel for communicating between North Norfolk and the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, which is over there somewhere. That's quite a long way to go with somebody who's in coronary arrest. We already have very poor traffic response, ambulance response times in North Norfolk. And ambulance response times are most certainly not taken into account in the micro-simulation modelling exercise, which apparently did not take any account of not only the nature of local agriculture, but also the existence of quarrying. Frimstone has quarries which move up and down the 1145 many, many times a day, and other activities which go on along that road, as well as commuting from Norwich, from North Norfolk into Norwich. So I think that at the very least, the inputs to that model need to be classified in much more detail, and questions of ambulance response time should be taken very seriously indeed. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Could I ask Norfolk County Council?
John Shaw, Norfolk County Council. I think you need to understand the background to that model, and because I would agree with a large chunk of what you're saying. The County Council didn't ask for the model to be produced, and one of the reasons is for what's been said, you can garbage in, garbage out. The reason it was produced was purely to try and help the parish council understand how that traffic is going to move around on that network. It wasn't for any other reason. It isn't something that we would have asked for. So one of the questions you asked of the applicant was, have they done things in accordance with industry standard? And I'd probably say, well, actually, it went beyond that in many ways. It isn't something that we asked for.
So I think the question that we're considering here, therefore, is understanding the point that you've made and the concerns that have been raised by the parish councils. What if we take the position that perhaps the raw data is not of a high quality or is open to debate? What would the applicant do in response to that? Is there a different scenario or a different modelling pattern or a different intervention along the street that would occur therein?
Andrew Ross, on behalf of the applicant, I think I'd concur with what Mr. Shaw said about the model. My recollection was the model came after the scheme design was discussed in detail. So the scheme design, and as I pointed out earlier, the issue of passing bays and the distance between passing bays is effectively influenced by the quantum of traffic. And the scheme that was designed and ultimately accepted by Norfolk County Council was satisfied that quantum of traffic. The VISM model was more about how that traffic interacted. So to answer the earlier question, I'm satisfied that the traffic data collected was within industry standards for a neutral situation. It's not uncommon to apply assumptions to traffic data to try and simulate a future year, which are ideally in the quantum. If those assumptions prove to be wrong, they won't fundamentally alter the design of that scheme unless they were wrong to a huge quantum. it's unlikely that there's going to be a huge traffic generator down there. Certainly not a new one, because that would have been examined through the planning system. And the existing ones, there's operational concerns for the agri business as well as the construction business, and efficient traffic flows are an efficient business. So in summary, we could debate whether those assumptions are correct or not, but it's not going to materially affect that highway intervention scheme that was agreed through the Hornsey Project 3 examination process and adopted by the applicant.
So my understanding is there is some disagreement about the input that went into the base case or the reference case. There hasn't been any sensitivity analysis because it's not a model that the County Council would recognise, and therefore the methodology wasn't agreed. It's not that sort of transport model. It's a micro model for a small area to try and indicate the type of response that might happen on the road. No more, no less, and let's not package it up as anything further than that. So therefore the sensitivity to that modelling is limited because it isn't a model in the traditional sense that we might know. And I'm seeing that the County Council is nodding in terms of your interpretation that whether or not the raw data for the base case or the reference case is perfect or not, and there is a degree of tolerance, it would not affect the intervention that the County Council would wish to see. Is that a reasonable summation of what I've just heard? Probably going to turn to the County Council.
John Shaw, Norfolk County Council. Yes, I would agree with that, madam.
And let me ask Oulton Parish Council, please.
Alison Shaw, Oulton Parish Council. Thank you. We didn't ask for the VISIM modelling either. It was forced upon us. But once it existed, we had to react to it. And it proved certain things and it disproved others. We also could have done without it. The point remains that we challenge the basis on which the vehicle movements were established, which were taken over just one day. There was a week when they had monitoring equipment up, but they only did a traffic count for one day. The rest of the equipment was measuring other things. A point that I must add to what the applicant has just said, to what Mr. Ross has just said, is a point that is very close to our concerns in Oulton Parish, which is exactly the point he has made, that those agribusinesses are commercial businesses and they will adjust to whatever happens rationally and commercially. This is one of our main concerns, that neither the applicant here, nor the applicant for Vanguard, the same applicant, nor the applicant in Hornsey 3 has ever suggested that they will drive their construction traffic through the northern end of Oulton Street, the residential end, unlike, by the way, what they have to do with Causton High Street. So we have been assured and assured again by all applicants that we are safe, in inverted commas. We do not feel safe, quite apart from the total destruction of the habitat of the old railway gatehouse, which exists right there at the junction between Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas's activities, construction activities, and also Hornsey 3's main construction compound. And their lives will be not worth living, really. Quite apart from the old railway gatehouse, we are concerned in the northern end of the fully residential end of Oulton Street, that all the agricultural traffic, once these projects are up and running, will look at that, go through pilot vehicles, road stoppages for AILs for Hornsey 3, who do have AILs, and will come through and bring all their cables to the Oulton airfield. And 36 will come every 3 weeks, or is it four? I can't quite remember. Some of these facts keep escaping me, but they will come relentlessly for two and a half years to Oulton airfield, and they will be in the form of AILs. And so they will require that southern end of Alton Street to be closed and stoppages on the Holt Road to allow the AILs in and out. They may or may not happen at night. This is supposed to be an advantage, but maybe it isn't such an advantage if you live in the old railway gatehouse, if they come through at night. But we in the northern end of Alton Street are very concerned that this intense agricultural traffic, which goes on for 9 or 10 months of every year, will find its own level, and it will come all, perhaps, through the northern end of Alton Street because of the dysfunction. It may just work, the traffic flow of the southern end of Alton Street. Highways can say yes to it, and it may work, but it may not be comfortable for the agribusinesses. And they will then come through the northern end of Alton Street, and there is no planning mechanism to stop that happening. There never is.
So thank you for that. So yesterday I mentioned that we were undertaking an unaccompanied site inspection, and we spent quite a considerable time looking at the street in Alton. And we did observe the traffic flows and what sort of vehicles or machinery was coming up and down. So we're very conscious of, and indeed the Humpback Bridge and the location of that property. So we have seen it. We're very conscious of what you are referring to. Can I just ask County Council for a view about the concern that out with this application, and the HGV is connected with any of the three proposed wind farms, the machinery would be moved that will be on the road in relation to harvesting throughout the year could potentially continue through down the end of the street and through what is a more residential location. What would be the County Council's response to that, please?
Martin Dixon, Network Management, Norfolk County Council. For the purposes of the application, it's relatively easy to control traffic and the way traffic uses associated with the application to prevent them using the north end of Alton Street. We've discussed this in detail with them, and it would be a road signage, and an undertaking in the construction traffic management plan where they would detail their proposals and how they propose to enforce and enact them to prevent construction traffic or anything associated with that project accessing the site from the north end of Alton Street, i.e. there'll be kind of no entry signs. It would be enforced for toolbox talks for that particular project. The north end of Alton Street also has a weight limit, a 7.5 ton weight limit in place on it, which is designed to prevent large vehicles using Alton Street. And that is any large vehicle, be it a agri-traffic, be it HGVs, shortcutting. Problem is always of this is enforcement, because it's a Road Traffic Act issue. Whilst it's put in place for the County Council, it comes under the Road Traffic Act, and it is an enforcement issue. And I think that's probably the crux of the problem, if you like, where we're sitting. Because yes, if it's happening now, being realistic about it, which I think we have to be. Be pragmatic. If it's happening now, I understand the concerns raised by Corson Village, Alton Village, that north end may be subject to more violations of the limit, shall we say, than perhaps it was. But again, it's all going to be down to enforcement of that if it becomes a real problem.
So I'm conscious that we are examining this application and we're not looking at the network around Norfolk County Council more broadly. So there's a kind of a balance to how far I want to push this point. But I'm sure there have been conversations, I've no doubt, in history about the sort of issues that have been raised before us. And what measures have been forthcoming from the County Council to try and mitigate the concerns that the residents have in that location, apart from you've mentioned a weight limit. What sort of other things have been tried, or are other things proposed? And I do appreciate that there's a line here to draw.
Indeed, there is. Martin Dixon, Norfolk County Council. Yes, the problem with any restriction, and as again is to enforcement, is also its breadth and its application. Again, in Norfolk, very very rural area, many agricultural operations ongoing, and the problem with any weight restriction that you put in, it will always have a caveat that there will be exceptions to that, and those exceptions are for reasonable access to business, and that is one of the problems, as Alton point out. Anything like that is and it's things like potato stores, sugar beet stores. The sugar beet season around here can have a huge effect on the network. Any road traffic act that we put in place is always going to be limited in its effect. And without putting hard engineering measures in place, it's going to be very difficult. And again, it comes back to enforcement. And we are a rural environment. We are very agriculture-based around here. We accept that there are limitations to that, to those applications.
Okay, thank you. I'm not keen to over-prolong the history, but it's helpful to add an insight into it. I'm going to ask Alton if there's any further comments you wish to make, and then I'm just going to ask the applicant for a sort of final view from them on this particular matter, please.
Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. Thank you for that clarification from Norfolk Highways. It is exactly thus, that though there may be, in theory, a 7.5-ton weight limit on Alton Street, it is broken every day, every half hour perhaps of every day, and there's nothing that we don't believe that Highways can do anything about that either, because it is agriculture and it is local business, and we've always understood that. So we don't complain about it. We do not wish it to be doubled or trebled, and that is our fear, that it will be displaced by the congestion, the massive congestion that will be on the lower end of the street, that this will displace agricultural traffic, which has to have access to its business, its place of business, and we will get doubling and trebling of agricultural business, which is heavy duty, up our residential end of the street. I'm sorry it's taken so much time. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. And unless the County Council wants to come back on that, it looks like you might do.
Martin Dixon, Norfolk County Council. Really just to accord with Alton Parish Council's comments, really just to reinforce again or reiterate that without hard engineering, it is a very movable feast, particularly at certain times of the year in this county. It's the nature of the county.
Thank you very much. And just asking the applicant if they wish to make any response in relation to this.
Can I just clarify first, ma'am? We are still going to cover question two about Link 68.
Yes, we have slightly drifted into that one, but yes.
Okay, so I'll mention AILs under there. Just to reinforce Mr. Dixon's point about controlling development traffic, there's a firm commitment in the outline construction traffic management plan not to make that right turn manoeuvre off Hayden Lane down to the residential area of the street, and that will be subject to the enforcement and monitoring regime outlined in broad terms in the outline traffic management plan, but to be firmed up for requirement discharge.
Yes, and I see people nodding in response to that.
So moving on to the next agenda item, and we have drifted into this a little bit, so we'll try and keep this as brief as possible. We've noted two mitigation schemes that are in your outline, in your deadline one
submission, which is Appendix 7, which is the mitigation proposed for Link 68, and Appendix 4, which is your pilot scheme concept. We've also noted that Alton and Norfolk County Council have responded to both of them, and they still have some residual concerns. And I suppose my question to the applicant first is, have there been any updates to both of these schemes since deadline one? And the commitment to no right turn on Hayden Street, is that a part of one of those mitigations, or is that separate?
So, Andrew Ross, on behalf of the applicant, I can confirm there's been no update to either of those schemes. And the right turn commitment will be in the outline traffic management plan submitted at deadline one.
Very sorry. Could you just start again and also just make reference to the material you've got on the screen, the drawing. Is that the right drawing? Is that appendix? Is that appendix? No, this is the pilot vehicle concept. I think you might be talking about the mitigation scheme, which is appendix 7.
Sorry, the pilot scheme is the scheme I want to discuss now.
Okay,
it would also be useful if we could get table 1, which I believe is one of the slides.
Yeah.
If we could put table 1 up first, and then I'll cover the pilot vehicle scheme.
Fine. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
While we're doing that, if I could just make the point that the abnormal indivisible load demand, there is no abnormal indivisible loads associated with the applicant's proposal for the street. These are cable drum movements associated with Hornsey Project 3. So AILs are not a project-specific consideration here, but obviously cumulative they are, and that's the point I'll endeavour to respond to. So useful, I feel, to contextualise the movements associated with Norfolk Boreas. So these are the movements that will traverse down Hayden Lane for which we're proposing the pilot vehicle strategy. And I suppose the key figure to focus on, and this is scenario 2, by the way, so very much worst case. The key figure to focus on is that top line primary peak, that for 6 weeks there will be 80 daily HGV movements, 40 in and 40 out, accessing MA7. This equates, given the delivery window, this equates to 8 hourly HGV movements, or 4 movements in and 4 movements out. So at that level of demand, mobile traffic management strategy is felt appropriate. So in other words, the pilot vehicle, as we colloquially call it, because it avoids the need for disruptive highway intervention and placing passing bays that you would subsequently take out and reinstate. That's a common approach for low volume traffic. So if we could just go on to the next slide, and I'll try to explain.
The secondary peak is also noteworthy in the context of daily HGV movements at 61. What is a secondary peak, just please, for my information?
So that's the second highest traffic demand and the associated period of 16 weeks there. So rather than present an average, we've tried to quantify in a bit more detail what the demand will be there.
And because of the conversations we've been having earlier, we're not able to provide with clarity the background against the reference case, as I would call it. How many HGV movements are currently going upwards and downwards at those times?
Well, the survey data indicates how many HGV data, but I don't want to reopen the argument about
hence my point, for the reasons we've discussed, there's some uncertainty around the base case.
Yes, indeed. So, the idea of this then is...
Now, I certainly can't see that. Maybe those behind me, in front of me can see that behind me easier. So I think a quick summary is going to be helpful.
I don't think that's... I beg your pardon, ma'am. I don't think that's the right graphic. We're looking for the works plan.
Mr. Ross, if I could just interrupt here. Rather than giving us a summary of the scheme that you've already submitted, what I was after was if there has been or there's intending to be any updates to the scheme following the concerns expressed by Alton Parish Council, and indeed if there has been any conversation with the Highway Authority on that matter.
So there's no intention. Sorry if I'm not made myself entirely clear. At that level of traffic demand, pilot vehicle scheme will work, because essentially what you do is you momentarily close the link whilst you call through a vehicle. So there'll be two-way radio, momentarily close the link.
I think this has been set out, hasn't it, in the representations that we received?
Indeed. So the delays aren't influenced by the volume of traffic, it's the distance it takes a HGV to traverse the 1,500 metres it needs to do to get into the access, which is roughly speaking three minutes. Hopefully that explains things.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. And something that you alluded to before, which is that there will be no AILs movement for your project, but there will be for Hornsey 3. Can I just bring in Alton Parish Council here, because they have obviously referred to that cumulative effect in their representation, and we'd just like to understand briefly what your concerns are and get the applicant to respond to that.
Thank you. Paul Killingbrack, Chair, Alton Parish Council. Well, I'm seeking clarification here now, actually, because our understanding is that if Hornsey goes first, for example, they will do the road improvement changes to the street, passing places, etc. And then Vanguard will follow on and keep them. But I'm not sure, and this is where I need clarification, I'm not sure if neither of those two go ahead and Boreas is on its own, are those changes going to be done to the street? And if not, is it a pilot vehicle situation from their compound all the way down to the Holt Road, the 1149? I'm not clear on that. I believe that the pilot vehicle we just talked about here was just on the Hayden Road, which is a relatively short period distance, which is fine. But what we are unclear about is if Boreas is on its own, are those works going to be done, and who is, you know, and well, are they going to be done?
Andrew Ross on behalf of the applicant. I can confirm that Norfolk Boreas, for scenario two, will adopt the very same scheme that Hornsey Project 3 has developed. For scenario one, it will be a direct follow-on from Vanguard.
Thank you for clarifying that. We do worry about the combined effects of Hornsey and Vanguard and Boreas. I think my colleague wishes to make a comment on that.
Just before we hear from your colleague, how can you remind me how that is secured, that commitment?
Claire Davis, on behalf of the applicant, it's secured in the outline traffic management plan. It confirms that the scheme will be implemented under both scenarios for Norfolk Boreas.
Sorry, that's what about the Hornsey 3 eventuality?
Claire Davis, on behalf of Norfolk Boreas, the applicant. Whether Hornsey go ahead or we go ahead, then it will implement it under all scenarios, cumulative or individual, in case of scenario 2.
And that is already covered in the document?
In the outline traffic management plan, yes.
Ms. Shaw. Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. Our other concerns, thank you for that confirmation, by the way, from the applicant. Our other concerns are somewhat related to the AILs. The AILs, as Mr. Ross has just indicated, are only related to Hornsey Project 3, because this applicant is not using AILs. The cable drums are smaller. However, they are using low loaders. They are large vehicles, especially in these rural lanes, and the interaction between the cumulative interaction between the necessity to get Hornsey 3's AILs, which are going to come regularly throughout 2.5 year construction period, up that stretch of southern end of the street into their main construction compound. The interaction of those large AILs with the, albeit smaller, but still significantly large, low loaders carrying the cable drums for this applicant, for Norfolk Boreas, do concern us, because we think that's going to add significantly to the congestion and the dysfunction of the lower end of Alton Street. We may come on to some of this. We have concerns about the non-AIL nature of Norfolk Boreas's cable drums, but maybe we'll come on at the next two items on the agenda to that. Thank you.
So if it's okay, we'll hold that over for the next couple of agenda items. Were there any final comments from anyone before we move on to the cable logistics areas? Okay, if we can move on to the next agenda item, and if we could get a really brief response from the applicant on this question, which is to understand the purpose of the cable logistics area in Alton and what it will be used for.
Certainly, Chris Jones on behalf of the applicant. This part of what I'm saying is already covered in the clarification note that was submitted at deadline 2, but basically the cable logistics area is a single area of existing hard standing, which allows the temporary storage of cable drums and materials associated with the cable pulling and cable jointing. So that's things like pre-molded cable joints, winches for cable pulling, and the cable runners, which are used as part of the cable installation process. The facility might also have a small site office, welfare facilities, and activities to support the cable pulling works itself. Associated materials, to be a bit more specific in terms of the joint kits, etc., there'll also be cement-bound sand, but cement-bound sand only for the joint pit areas themselves. And to give an indication of the amount of materials that we're talking about, the HDV movements associated with that activity will be 5 arrivals and 5 departures per day. So hopefully that clarifies the use of the cable logistics area.
the arrivals and departures, you mentioned five of each, and then you also mentioned that there may or may not be a site office. What would determine whether there was a site office, and how would we be certain of the number of arrivals and departures?
In terms of the movements, those are in terms of the worst case that's planned. I mean, just to put it in perspective, the total area for cable drum storage at the cable logistic area is 20 drums, and the total requirements for the project is something like 350 drums for the entire length. So it's a far reduced number of cable drums compared to if the project was using high voltage AC technology, which is one of the big differences with this particular project.
And the other point?
In terms of the welfare office, I think that yes, that could be assumed that will be present.
What could be assumed?
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So the cable logistics area is used via Link 68, and there's a limit on the number of both HGVs and people movements on that link as part of, as secured in the outline traffic management and planning appendix one. So that cap includes any related traffic to the cable logistics area.
And the other point about the welfare office, I'm still hearing coulds and maybes, but how would certainty be forthcoming on that?
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So is that it will be used for, there will be some welfare and site office function at the cable logistics area. However, any movements associated with that have been factored into the pre-existing traffic numbers.
I'll take comments from Alton Parish Council and then the County Council. Ms. Shaw.
Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. This slightly goes into the next agenda item as well, which is traffic, but in terms of the use of the cable logistics area, the Parish Council does have concerns about the reference to 20 cable drums being stored at the cable logistic area at any one time. It's totally understood by us that it is a small area, it's not a huge area, and that its capacity probably won't take any more than 20 cable drums. But the number of cable drums for the whole project is actually surely 360 times two rather than 360. 360 for Boreas, but it's 300 for the whole project. If you're on scenario two, I think you have to nearly double that. Anyway, we'll seek confirmation of that. Anyway, it is significant. It is 360 or times two. The reference is always made to storage of only 20 as a buffer. And we do understand that that the applicant's construction method is different from Hornsey 3's and is much more based on mobilisation areas along the whole length of the cable route. We do understand that. However, we are still concerned. We still seek confirmation of whether this storage of 20 at Alton is a kind of one-off 20 for emergencies of some kind, that 20 will arrive and they may only go out at the very end or whatever. Or is this a rolling program of 20s? Will 20 come in and go out over a period of 2 or 3 months and then another 20 will come in and then another 20 will come in? We have concerns that this is actually more than 20 that will come and once go out of the CLA. Thank you.
Before the applicant responds, can I get some comments from Norfolk County Council, and perhaps you can come in after that. Thank you.
Martin Dixon, Network, Norfolk County Council. Our understanding of it, and we would seek clarification from the applicant, our understanding of the explanation of the cable logistics area is due to the fact that this project uses what they call a just-in-time delivery system for cables. It's become more common throughout the industry where supplies are brought straight from the point of source, be it a port or whatever, direct to site. It saves large storage areas. And that our understanding is that this is purely a short term in case that just-in-time system fails. It could be adverse weather, it could be road problems, and that is our understanding. It is not intended, I would seek clarification, it is not intended to be in constant use. I would seek clarification at those 8 vehicle movements. I believe it's 10 somewhere in its in the original submission, but those 8 vehicle movements would purely be to get the stock level up to that 20 drums that you need, and they would then be held in case they were needed. If they need to be replenished, if they were used, then I would expect that there would be another 8 vehicle movements to replenish that stock. The welfare area, my understanding, and again we would seek clarification, is purely for the administration and the expedition of the supplies out for that emergency, if you like it, scenario when the just-in-time system fails.
Thank you. Does the applicant have a response?
Chris Jones on behalf of the applicant. Taking the points, trying to keep to the order, 360 is the total number for the Boreas project. So I should have been specific in terms of when
one
it,
or two?
It's the same number for Boreas in terms of the cables. It's not considering Boreas and Vanguard, just simply Boreas. So in terms of the 20, yes, I referred to the 20 being the maximum, and that, as Mr. Shaw pointed out, is the buffer stock. The intention is to not have all deliveries of cable drums to the cable logistics area. The intent is to have a just-in-time delivery process to the point where the cable is actually needed to minimise the movements. And the maximum movements are 10 per day, 5 in, 5 out, is what's been assessed. I think that covers the points.
If I could just make a response.
Yes, perhaps you can.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
So, yes, of course. My name's Rob Driver, also employed by Vattenfall, also on behalf of the applicant. So in relation to the final question you raised about the site office and welfare facilities, as you should all be aware, we're proposing a two-stage process for our cable installation. Stage one, where we're installing ducts, and then once the duct installation phase is complete, then cable installation and jointing of cables will start. So the mobilization areas are only in existence during the first phase. And there will obviously be a need for a site office for the cable installation contractor during the second cable installation and jointing phase. So the intention is that this is one possible location for that site office for the cable installation phase. So the use of that location for the site office and welfare is not intended to be only during top-up and drawdown facilities of the cable drums. It's intended that would take place during the whole of the second cable installation phase.
Does the County Council want to come back on that?
Martin Dixon, Norfolk County Council. Yes, we understood that it is purely for the cable pull phase of works. And that would be the only time you would actually see HGVs utilising that area.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. Okay. On that basis, for an occasional standby usage for a backup method, I think we're happy that the highway mitigation on the street and the method you have outlined on Hayden Road for the pilot vehicle is acceptable at this point. It's for occasion. If it was going to be constant for the whole contract, I think we may have to have considered differently. But if it is as you describe it, we're satisfied that relatively low use at that point, Hayden Road, and indeed the street with its mitigation could withstand that. And I think it's a fair provision given the just-in-time nature of your proposal.
And so my follow-on to that, and thank you for that clarification, is the fact that there is some vagueness in the air would suggest that the outline traffic management plan isn't as clear as it might be on this point. And I know we're coming on to that later in the agenda, but perhaps it's something that we can touch on later in terms of tidying things up. Because if you're clear about what you're doing and there seems to be no disagreement, then the outline traffic management plan should reflect this.
Okay, related, and that's moving on to agenda item four, is to understand the traffic management proposals in relation to the cable logistics area. So just only add to the points that have not already been said.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So with regards, there is no specific traffic management measures for the cable logistics area, but as we've alluded to previously, it is covered by the scheme that is proposed on Link 68 into the highway intervention scheme, and other mitigation as outlined in the outline traffic management plan will be in place during the cable pulling works as well as the cable duct installation.
Yes, Alton Parish Council.
Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. We have one, we take the point that the applicants just made, but we have one concern about the traffic management of the traffic coming out of the CLA. Because the cable drums are smaller and therefore the low loaders are smaller, but they are still low loaders with cable drums on, they are not classified as AILs. Hornsey Project 3's AILs are, because of being classified as such, are under the control, or well, they're not under the control of, but they have to seek permission and give information to highways whenever they are moved. The low loaders for bringing the cable drums in and out of the CLA at Alton for Norfolk Vanguard and Norfolk Boreas will not be under such authorisation, if you like. Under such authorisation or such, they do not have to provide information to highways. This is our understanding. We have, therefore, significant concerns that they will be able to move the cable drums in and out of the CLA whenever they please. And because of the congestion that will occur, if these two big projects go ahead at the same time, that will occur, they will be tempted to do it at night. And therefore, this will add to the disastrous environmental impacts on the residents of the old railway gatehouse. Incidentally, as a parish council, we're slightly concerned about the fact that we have been approached by the residents of the old railway gatehouse 3 days ago, I think it was, a few days ago, who last Tuesday were approached by an estate agent in Holt. In fact, the very estate agent who had sold them the house 2 or 3 years ago. And this estate agent said that he was visiting on behalf of an unnamed anonymous buyer who was interested in buying their house and that money was no object. Now, this obviously is something that's completely out with this the remit of this application examination. But it is a concerning to us as a parish council and to those residents. It is a concerning fact. Incidentally, the residents shared with us that they thought about it and went back to the estate agent and said that they were they had bought the house because they wanted to live there forever and that they would rather stay there and that they were not interested. However, my point about the AILs does concern us because they will, not the AILs, the cable drums for Boreas, because they will be able to move them whenever they like. And it is a concern for us that there might be nighttime activity, further nighttime activity outside the old railway gatehouse. Thank you.
Could I ask the applicant to just respond to the first point about nighttime activity? The second point, Ms. Shaw, that you've raised, I think, is noted, but it's not one that I'm going to seek any responses to.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. In terms of out-of-hours working, which is what I believe Alton Parish Council are referring to, that is controlled under DCO Requirement 26, so we would have to inform people if that was our intention. So though we don't have the same restrictions as our normal loads, if there was, in the event that any movements outside of hours would be required, then it would be notified under that requirement.
Thank you.
That's helpful. Do the County Council want to come back on that?
Martin Dixon, North County Council. Yes, we would expect to see that. It has to be detailed in your outline, CTMP, Construction Traffic Management Plan, that provision that if they were intending out of hours, shall we say, deliveries, that residents would be contacted and consulted or advised prior. So just something that acknowledges that in the Construction Traffic Management Plan, please. Yep.
Claire Davis, on behalf of the applicant, we can reaffirm that commitment in the outline traffic management plan, but as I can say, that it is controlled by the DCO requirement, so we can confirm that.
I'm going to move on, and there's just two clarifications that I'm seeking from the applicant. One is the increase in the cumulative daily HGV movements that you've set out in your clarification note on link 68. Can you clarify, firstly, if this is spread out evenly across the year or concentrated during certain times? And the second question is if the increase in the HGV movement influences or changes the outcome of the ES cumulative assessment in any way?
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So I believe the figures that are referred to in this item are to do with the figures that are in the cable logistics note. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would be useful to have that table up to explain those figures, mm-hmm. if that's possible, in the cable logistics note, which would be, that's it. If we could zoom into that table, thank you. So the table one of the cable logistics note. So table one of the cable logistics note was to provide an indication of the numbers that were specific to the cable logistics area as well as along link 68. So to be clear, the 10 HGV movements we were referring to earlier is the sum total of the first two columns. So that will be to do with, it's been estimated based on cable drum movements and associated materials. As mentioned, the cable logistics area is also part of link 68, and therefore there is other movements along that link that are outside the use of the cable logistics area. So there is a total of 65 HGV movements for Norfolk Boreas along that link during the cable pulling phase, which is the phase of the cable pulling works that were the stage we're talking about. The remaining numbers address the cumulative scenario. So the 118 that's how many movements are predicted for Hornsey Project 3. And then the cumulative total between us and Hornsey Project 3 is 183 HGVs in total. So that's made up of the 65 HGVs proposed by ourselves and the 118 proposed by Hornsey Project 3. So there hasn't been a change or an increase in the cumulative number. It's just a breakdown of where that number's come from. I'll address the point with regards to the implications for the ES, if that's all clear. With regards to what has been assessed in the environmental statement, in a cumulative scenario, a worst-case assessment has been done, and this is actually based on the duct installation phase, which has an increased number of HGVs. So the breakdown, as it's shown there, isn't the worst case, and the numbers provided there don't make any difference to the environmental assessment. This has been considered on a worst case for duct installation, where we have a higher number of HGVs on that particular link, and there's subsequently a higher cumulative effect, and that is then subsequently that is what the mitigation scheme has been designed upon on that worst case. So there's the figures break down here have no changes for what's in the ES.
Just to help us out, after the hearing, would you please just provide the reference to that so we can be sure that we're looking at the right stuff?
Yes, absolutely.
Any final comments from the County Council?
Just looking at your Tobler. And from Professor Barnett at the back, please.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a request for information. These figures, how are they arrived at? Are they the result of a model? And if so, what are the inputs to that model? Or are they based on empirical experience? Where do these figures come from?
They're a result of what's known in the industry as first principles transport planning. So the construction engineers for the project have provided a comprehensive schedule of activities over program, and from that we can work out the demand for materials and resources, and from that we can drill down to what the daily HGV and personnel demand will be. There's the audit trail is provided in chapter 24 of the ES, the traffic and transport chapter.
Thank you very much. May I ask a supplementary question? So this is an industry standard. Do you have any information about the variance between estimates and actual by the end of such a project as part of your industry standard?
What typically happens is there's a construction traffic management plan submitted with a major project, and it's becoming more typical in smaller projects in the modern era. That construction traffic management plan sets out a monitoring regime. For the larger projects, there'll be regular reports to stakeholders detailing whether the contractor is keeping to those the assessment window, if you like. If they're not, then remedial matters need to be put in place, and they need to demonstrate that they're doing that. And those for a number of projects will be point of record. I'm outside this examination. I'm happy to give you an example of one or two projects that may have that monitoring information.
It wasn't really that.
Sorry,
I wanted
if you can just
else.
Direct questions just in order.
May I ask one more supplementary question?
For sure.
Because I'm trying to ascertain, ma'am, what is the variance around the estimate? Because it could be 0.1%, 1% or 10%. And judging from what I have just heard, which is very helpful, the data are there, but it would be useful to actually have an analysis of such data so as we could have a sense of what is the variance around the estimate. Otherwise, these figures are useful, but they're uncertain. They have a high level of uncertainty, potentially. Thank you.
Thank you. Understand the point. Would you like to respond to that point, please?
Andrew Ross, on behalf of the applicant. I think the key point here is that these are ceiling figures. They are applying a, if you like the term, a Rochdale envelope approach to traffic numbers. In some cases, on some links, they've been capped at a ceiling above which stakeholders don't want to see, or Norfolk Highways don't want to see, an increase above. The figures have been derived by applying contingencies to certain activities and very much represent worst case scenario, which we would anticipate once the contractor's on board and value manages, the variance would be down, not up.
Thank you very much for that explanation. What I'm inclined to do now, because it is 20 to 2, is to have a break now for an hour, and then to come back to consider North Walsham, Little London Road, and then through the agenda that way. Item 7 of this agenda, B7, to consider whether there are any other implications in relation to Alton arising from the Norfolk Vanguard letter, actually is repeated at item D, so we will come back to it then. It's not that we've overlooked that point. Mm-hmm. So, yes, and my colleague's just reminding me, we discussed an additional approach potentially to looking at the Hall Road around Corston. And one of the questions that we have is, if we were to look at a different approach potentially to that location, what would your view be? I appreciate it's not a fully formed view, in relation to whether that would need to be a change request. If you could give some thought to that, and we might come back to that at the end of the day, that would be helpful. And is that right?
That would be fine, yes. We will give some thought to that. Could I just add one further point? And this is to looking ahead to the rest of the day. If we were to run out of time and certain items had to be dealt with in writing, could I suggest that at least on landscape and visual, we try to deal with that today, simply because there are a number of areas there where it would probably be much more helpful to be explained in person by reference to certain visualizations and plans, where we have both Joe Phillips on the landscape side and Claire Davis on the wider issues around landscape and visual, and we could do that in person. It might be slightly easier to do it today rather than trying to do it in writing.
Yes, I understand that. And North Norfolk, I've been advised. There we are. I couldn't quite see. Yes.
Madam, thank you. Estelle Dehon for North Norfolk District Council. Again, just thinking about management of the agenda, as I think with even a fair wind, we may be struggling. It would be very helpful if perhaps when the examination reconvenes, an indication could be given of the matters which you would find it most helpful to be dealt with in orally rather than in writing. And just to flag that from North Norfolk's perspective, we do have our noise person and our coastal person here. But we understand that if those are matters which you would prefer to deal with in writing, it would be helpful for us to know that now, so that or quite soon, so that they can be sent back to the office, essentially.
Indeed. And we're also conscious of a lot of parish councils here. So what we will do is consider and try and make sure that if people are here in the room, then we enable you to speak with us. That's kind of our guiding principle, because like all of you, nobody wishes to have a trip out and not actually have an opportunity to contribute. So we will kind of just think about how this is the best way to handle things. And I, as I said at the beginning, we were always conscious that we may have to put some things into written questions, so it's not a surprise that we are where we are today. Yes, from County Council.
John Shaw, Norfolk County Council. Just to point out, Madam, that Martin Dixon and myself were going to go after point 2, so before construction effects.
Excellent. Thank you. I don't mean excellent that you're going, but excellent. Thank you for letting me know. All right. Is everybody ready to have a break? It's 2:45. Let's come back at 2:45. Thank you.